Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Robbie Hawley as my special expert guest. Rob Hawley's sales experience spans 20 years in the automotive industry. He was the general manager at a BC Jeep dealership, where he helped achieve and maintain a number one standing amongst all Jeep dealers in Canada. Rob also helped another Chrysler dealer outperform and maintain some of the highest CSI ratings in the country set by the manufacturer. Rob's success in sales is primarily due to product knowledge, ethical business practice, dedication to his career, and a great sense of humor. Rob has a great reputation in the automotive industry and a very positive rapport with his many colleagues and associates. Rob is currently self-employed. He buys and sells virtually every make and model of car in the market and is an expert in the assessment and appraisal of any vehicle's value. On a personal level, Rob is also committed to a lifestyle of fitness, good nutrition, and healthy living. Hi, Robbie. Welcome to Sports Nutrition Update.
Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me. Pleased to be here.
Rob, we're definitely going to get into sales and services, but for now, let's talk a little bit about the car and automotive industry in general. What are some of the current trends in consumer purchasing?
Well, Corey, right now, it's been on for a long time. The most current trend is, as we see on the roads here, is the sport utility vehicle. They dominate the road. We see mothers, soccer mothers, driving these big sport utilities filled with kids and soccer balls and then hockey gear. And that seems to be the trend, especially here on the West Coast. And that's from British Columbia right down to the West Coast of Mexico.
So a sports utility vehicle, I see like every major a car company coming out with a different version.
Yes, every car company probably has three or four or five different lines of their own sport utility. Not long ago, wasn't that long ago, about 20 years ago, where Jeep was the only manufacturer of the sport utility vehicle.
They're the first ones that started it off?
They're the first ones that started it off back in 1984 that had a four-door sport utility vehicle, and it just took off from there.
So what defines a sports utility vehicle?
Well, a sports utility vehicle is a vehicle that has a four-wheel drive capability that's a little higher off the ground. It's not a car. It's not a minivan. It's an integration of the two.
I like that name, sports. There's a connection for me right there.
Yes. Well, you feel a lot sportier or a lot more active if you own and operate a sport utility vehicle, but it's not always the truth.
So, and you see a lot of commercials on television today in the automotive industry. Do you think that has a huge influence on consumer buying?
It definitely does, Corey. It has a huge influence on consumer buying, especially with the younger demographics. And that's just promoting your image and your lifestyle.
So I see the commercial, and what am I trying to get through that? What is the dealership or the car company trying to portray? I see nice-looking people, healthy people. I see fun, sun, things like that.
That's exactly what they're getting after. They're getting after, especially in the sport utility products, they're getting out to the mountain climbing, the rock climbing, the skiing. They're getting into the scuba diving, anything to do that associates with sports, with the sports utility. But that's not always the case because people work 9 to 5, if not 8 till 7 o'clock at night. And by the time they have time off, they don't take their sport utility up to the mountain because they're too tired after working all week. So,
what about the quality of vehicles today? What comment do you have on that in terms of production and manufacturing?
The quality has certainly increased. There's large arguments on that. The safety rating for all the manufacturers is extremely higher than they have been ever in the past. And they're making them so much more safer to drive and for the passengers to drive. As long as you wear your seatbelt, your airbag's going to protect you. They say that the robotically built vehicles, which is everything, can't make mistakes. But even then, robotically built vehicles can make mistakes, and there's certain human error involved in those as well. But the quality is definitely improving. Some manufacturers greater than others. Other manufacturers not so good.
So the human element has been removed in this robotic process.
Well, it's not eliminated. It's been reduced significantly. And that's, you see all the layoffs of the plant manufacturers, and they just pick up any paper. And you see all the plant layoffs throughout North America. But there is still a human element, but it is reducing. Although some vehicles built, people say a vehicle built on an early Monday morning may not be as good as quality as a vehicle built on a Wednesday in the afternoon. That's not true. They're all the same, every single one of them.
Most people have a car. It's almost like a necessary evil, as I've heard it referred to, in life. We go out, we need a car, we want to buy a car. A lot of people don't buy a brand new car for the first time around, or some people buy used cars, for example. How do you know how to buy a used car? What are some of the steps that you could recommend to somebody who's in the market for a used car?
Well, there's several key issues there, Corey, and people buy a used car. It's either, like you said, their first one, or they're buying one of their kids a car, or helping their kids buy a car, or the family just needs a second car. My main number one thing is buy what you need, not what you want. Don't try and let your emotions play into it so much when you're buying a used car. You know, sit down, find out what your needs are. Is it a van? Is it a sport utility? Or is it just a small economical car to get me to and from work, or to get me to and from the grocery store, or do some shopping? Buying from a bonded and licensed dealer is absolutely a necessity. You must buy from a bonded and licensed dealer, and you're going to pay a little more money. You will pay a little more money because you have to pay the GST as well as the PST when you buy from a dealer. But that dealer is licensed. You can go back to the dealer if there's a problem, especially a new car franchise. You know, you wouldn't buy your nutritional supplements from a guy in the back of his garage. Just the same thing. You shouldn't buy a car from out of the paper. Buy it from a manufacturer.
Gotcha. Now, when I show up, for example, if I'm going to buy a car out of the newspaper and show up at this guy's house, he's got his car for sale. I guess one of the most important rules is make sure you go during the day, huh?
Well, yeah, and try and pick a day where it's not raining either, which is tough in Vancouver. You might only get a small window of opportunity there. So you can see the paint quality, and you can see if there's any scratches or any overspray in the car.
What's the first thing that you would do if you were going to look at a car to buy in that situation?
In the situation of buying it privately?
Yeah.
I would ask for the registration of the vehicle and make sure the registration matches the person you're talking to. Get some ID from that person. They may say they're selling their cousin's car or their mother's car, and it may not be that car at all. They may be just selling it. They may have bought it from one person and selling it to another person. That's called curbing a car. There's that point. Test drive the car for sure. And there's what's called Carfax on the internet, carfax.com. It'll give you the history of the car, whether it's been in any accidents or if it's got an odometer rollback. Very important.
Yeah, that's some really good tips and some great information. Now, do you recommend that I take that car to a third-party independent group and have it tested?
Absolutely, Corey. If you're mechanically inclined, you can do the inspection yourself on the car by checking the sound of the motor and checking the operation of the transmission to make sure it doesn't slip, and checking the tires and make sure there's a certain percentage left that's going to be roadworthy. If you're not so mechanically inclined, or even just a little bit mechanically inclined, you should absolutely get a third-party inspection on the vehicle. Now, some of these inspections may be almost too thorough because you are buying a secondhand vehicle, and there are going to be some problems, but you can use that in your negotiating terms when it comes to price.
Good stuff. Now, the human body has been compared to that of a car. I've used the analogy many times myself in terms of, say, daily maintenance and fuel. We talk about how race car drivers use a high-octane fuel, so put good food into your body. So what are some of the most common car problems that people experience, and how can we prevent them?
Well, the average person driving on the road today, and a lot of it, especially on the East Coast, is corrosion. And corrosion is a major factor for one is your body and your structural integrity of your body is hindered, as well as just appearance. The rust starts to form. Keep your car clean. Very important to keep your car washed. Even when it's in the winter, most people wash their car on a nice spring sunny day or on a nice summer day so it looks good, makes them feel better. But keep your car clean at all times, especially in the winter months. Engine and transmission failures is always a problem, and that can be prevented by changing your fluids. Just always change your oil, always change your transmission fluid. And put a date on the calendar, if whatever the recommendation of that car is, and it'll say so in the owner's manual, if it's every 2 months or 8,000 kilometers or 3 months or 10,000 kilometers or less, follow by that, and your car will last a long time. And when you go to sell it, your resale value will be a lot greater. Brakes are another preventative measure as well. Don't fix your brakes when they're completely gone. Once you have feel like you have no brakes left, don't go into your nearest mechanical shop or have your friend fix your brakes. Fix them and have them inspected routinely. Maybe every 5 to 6 months, just have them inspected. Most places nowadays will inspect them for no charge. They'll pull one wheel off the front and give you the percentage. They'll even bring you into the shop and show you your percentage of your pad. But don't do it when it's too late, because it's a few $100 to do your brakes at first. It's thousands or thousands of dollars to do them afterwards. But preventative maintenance can certainly save costly repairs.
So now let's get into the area of sales and service. Do you think that sales is sales? Meaning if you know how to sell something well, you could probably sell anything to anybody?
No, I don't think sales is sales whatsoever. My belief is you have to be passionate about what you're selling to be to feel and be successful. And success isn't measured on how many cars you can sell or the amount of money you make by selling the cars. It's to how you feel about doing your job. So you must be passionate about your product. I think that's part of the reason why I've been successful in my life, and I feel successful about what I've done in the automotive industry, is because I'm passionate about the type of cars I sell, and I like automobiles. I like tinkering with them. I like driving them. I don't mind even being stuck in traffic if it's a comfortable car.
So the key is be connected to the product, believe in the product, know the product.
Be well-versed, for sure.
That product knowledge always seems to be of such paramount importance. Now, what are some of the most important aspects of selling, say, in your field?
Well, you touched on it just now. It's product knowledge, Corey. You don't have to be the best salesperson and the fanciest salesperson. If you know what you're talking about, if you absolutely know that product inside and out, it'll sell itself. Listening to the customer is very important, too. Listen to their needs and their wants, and knowing about the product. If you start talking about a product that isn't true or you're not quite sure about it, they may know the answer, the customer may know the answer, and keep it within themselves and walk away from you.
So speaking of customers and customer satisfaction, is the customer always right?
No, Corey, the customer's not always right, but what happens in some cases, I've seen salespeople, they'll get into an argument with the customer. If the customer states something about the vehicle and the sales representative says no, that's not quite the way it is, they get into an argument, and that's the wrong thing to do in any kind of sales, not just automotive. I think what you have to do in that case is show some type of proof where the customer's wrong or needs to be re-educated or realigned on the product. And that's either by getting out a manual or getting a third party involved, like a service technician or a service manager.
Right, I can see that. So that creates kind of a negative atmosphere.
Absolutely.
When you're arguing with the customer.
Yes, and it happens more than you think it does.
And so why do you think that occurs? Is it the responsibility of the salesperson to nip that in the bud right away?
It's the responsibility of the salesperson for sure. And some salespeople will lead that customer down that path of negativity. There's a few paths you can choose, and the salesperson will actually draw that customer into there.
And then I guess you get the odd customer that's also difficult to deal with.
Yes, there are some people that come in, you know, all over the world that want to put up a fight or have this big brick wall in front of you and themselves, and it takes a large process and a long time to take that wall down brick by brick. And, Corey, sometimes you just can't take that wall down. Sometimes you can't.
So it's better to let them go.
It's better to not let them go. It's better to turn them over to another representative.
I see.
And that could be due with age. If a 20-something-year-old young male is talking with a 65-year-old male about a product and they're just not connecting together, and you have a sales representative that's in that same age category as a customer, turn it over.
So connect them with someone else who's coming from a different point of view
or
looks differently or talks differently. It changes the scene altogether.
Changes the scene altogether before letting the customer go. Because the number one goal is to help the customer out and buy a vehicle or buy any product for that matter. But it's before you let him go out the door, turn it over to one other person. And you don't have to turn it to the manager or the boss or the owner. Turn it over to another representative. And once that team of people can get that flow going, you work so well together.
Now, what about the fear that people have going into a car buying experience, and they are quite suspicious about being overpowered or misled or lied to? Do you think that there is any truth to that today, or is that something that we're borrowing from the yesteryear?
No, there's still truth in that today, Corey. Some of the manufacturers are changing. And I think the biggest fear of a customer that comes onto a car lot is getting ripped off, is paying too much. Not so much being overpowered, somewhat being lied to, but is paying too much. And the bottom line is it comes down to the dollar, it comes down to price. And it shouldn't be. Some of the manufacturers, Toyota for one, has a one price system. That's the price in Victoria, that's the price in Halifax, and all the way in between. There is no change in price. So the customer already has, when they come on the lot, they have that guard down of, am I going to get the best deal? Am I going to get the best price? But they're paying the same to here as they are anywhere else. Now it becomes, for that salesperson to sell that vehicle, product knowledge and treating the customer with respect.
So you like that kind of standard?
It's the only way that the car industry can go. It can't keep going the way it's going. It has to make that change. Toyota right now is the number two, just became number two internationally in the world in sales. They used to be at five. They've just beat out Ford, and they're going number one.
So a lot of that is because they're focusing on standards that are appealing to the customer.
Absolutely. They got a good quality product, and it's just their method of how they sell. Everybody's got a good quality product. It's their method of how they sell, and their method. Their salespeople aren't called salespeople. They're called product advisors. So they're well-schooled. They're trained every 3 months on current product and new product.
Sounds really good. So the industry is growing up a little bit. It's transforming into something that is not typified from how we used to think about used cars and buying cars.
That's correct. We still need to make some changes with some of the gray suits and blue suits in Detroit, but it'll come.
Now, how would you describe the general health and attitude of people who sell cars?
Well, some things haven't changed so much. When we think of a car salesman, we think of a guy with a cigar in his mouth and a plaid jacket and rings on his finger. And there are some of those today, and they're actually some of those guys aren't too bad as salespeople. But generally, the health of – I've been in it 20 years now, and the health of the people in the car industry is I find quite poor. There's quite a bit of tobacco use in this industry. There's quite a bit of alcohol use or abuse, I should say. Caffeine abuse as well. And it's just the industry peers, and it's just sort of what happens in this industry, and that's got to change too.
What about the life expectancy? Do you see a high turnover of salespeople?
Well, the life expectancy, as far as a job goes, yes, it's the rate is huge. Because it is a commissioned, or it was, it's changing now, commission industry. And if you're not performing, then you're either let go by the company or you need to make a change and find greener grass somewhere else.
So if you wanted to get into that industry, if you were interested in selling cars because you love cars and you have passion for vehicles, what would you look for from your own point of view going into the industry? Who would you want to work for?
I would want to work for a car company that has extensive training and will stand behind me and do my and provide my training through the car company itself and the manufacturer, not just force me into a meeting where I have to go learn about something and they're pointing me in the direction, but be behind me all the way and currently update the knowledge that I need.
So I know that you have had great success with managing people and maintaining their interest, and I think that what training and an emotional connection is very important, isn't it?
Yeah, emotional connection with the people. Your sales staff, I call it ESI, Employee Satisfaction Index. And it's like Disneyland. They treat their employees absolutely number one. And that flows right through to the customer, and they treat their customers number one. When we do that in the automotive industry, we do the same thing. If you treat your people like your number one asset, and not just sales staff, but as your number one asset, that energy will flow right through to the customer, and you will be a success no matter where you are. You don't need a Taj Mahal of a building to sell a lot of cars. You can do it in just a lumpy little lot somewhere. But if you have the right people starting from the top, you will do very well.
So that standard has to come from the top, though, doesn't it?
It can only come from the top because it has to be, and it has to be something that the person, the owner or the managers believe in passionately. They have to believe in that, not just read it in a manual and put it out there.
I think a lot of people are used to being treated with less respect than what they are expected to treat the customer. And so what you're saying is that if employers treat their own employees with the utmost of respect, if they put energy and time into them, if they train them, if they care and nurture for them, then those people will then go out and be able to do their job at the highest level.
There's no other way but that. And it will work. I've used that system for all my career. And I've spoken with some people I've worked with in the past, and they still adapt my method of selling it and treating people, and they've been successful. They've gone on to other companies or moved out of province or state and have done very well and have adapted my method. And it's just a common sense method.
And yet it doesn't seem to be so common in a lot of different industries where employers who own companies have that perception. Maybe it's because they're still clinging on to the past and they don't trust the process enough.
They don't trust the process because they can't see an instant dollar bill in the cash register.
So the old attitude is all about profit and just grinding people out.
Right. Just bonk them over the head, get their money, and on to the next one.
So this is more of a long term. This is exactly like what it takes to be well. Taking vitamin supplements, for example, or using a whole variety of different strategies to improve wellness. It doesn't happen overnight like taking prescription drugs. Yeah, so there's a good analogy there. So what are some of the biggest challenges people who work in the automotive industry have to overcome to stay well on the job?
For sure, it's nutrition and exercise. And I was guilty of this beginning of my career. You're on the sales floor and your diet consists of a fast food outlet. You run across the street and grab go to the Golden Arches and feed yourself that way. And you're hanging around the coffee machine having your 12th cup of coffee and outside smoking cigarette after cigarette. I also believe that if the person involved in the company, the managers or the owners involved in the company, are into nutrition, into exercise, that will also flow through to their sales staff. And encouragement. You see an employee who's starting to eat better, bringing the lunches from home and good quality foods, encourage them. Hey, that looks like a good meal you brought here today. And encouragement's everything.
Yeah, it seems as if that area is completely neglected in terms of the standards that I see when I walk into a dealership. And, of course, that maybe is a reflection of society in general, too.
Yeah, I think that's a reflection of society in general. Dealerships are a small company. It should be easier to work with a small company than a company of 10,000 employees. Most dealerships have about a 75 to 100 employee total.
Right. Okay, so as a result of training and focusing on good nutrition in your own life, what evidence do you see? What benefits do you realize? What is your source of motivation to do that as a person involved in the automotive industry?
Corey, due to nutrition and exercise supplements, I wake up in the morning with a much clearer head. I am focused and I stay focused. I feel good about myself because I look in the mirror when I get out of the shower and I look better. I feel better. I'm more alert. I'm more aware. I walk out of my house and into my job with an aura around me. And I put that energy out to my sales staff. It's done well for me because when I feel good, you do good.
Proving once again that you don't have to be involved in the health and fitness field in terms of profession to be involved in training and living well.
Absolutely not. Training and living well has become a part of my life and will be a part of my life forever. And I'm going to transfer that over to our two children. It's taken over my life and made me a much happier and better person for it.
Yeah, that's outstanding, Rob. That's excellent. Well, Rob, our time is gone. Once again, we've reached the end of the line. Thanks so much for being my special expert guest on this SNU edition. Now, just before we sign off, I always like to ask my guests for a special word or a message, something to help stimulate or motivate us. Have you got anything in mind?
Yeah, well, Corey, just believe in yourself and believe in what you're doing. And if you do that and are passionate about it, you will be successful in your own life.
Thanks very much, Rob, and thanks very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Corey.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is produced monthly and is a division of Holly Health Services located in Burnaby, British Columbia. For details regarding subscription, please visit CoreyHolly.com. This is Lisa Holly, wishing you the very best of health and wellness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.